Hello and welcome to another edition of the Saxo Market Call podcast. As always, my name is Soren Otto and we're a day late, but this is in fact the equity episode where we're going to talk about what's going on in the equity world. And that also means that I am joined, not in the studio, but from home today by you of all people, Peter Garnery. Hi, Peter. How are you doing?
Hi, Soren. I'm doing fine. Glad to be here.
Good to hear, Peter. I'm very pleased to have you as always. Today, we're going to discuss, we're going to look at regional performance, what's been going on around the world in the world of equities. And we're also going to look a little bit about NVIDIA, who is turned out to be quite an interesting case because it's had sort of a very, at least last week, Friday, it had a very, very exciting intraday move that we'll discuss. We're also going to talk a little bit about the CPI that came out yesterday, and then we're going to discuss Oracle before we close, which is one of those old school IT companies that actually did quite well. But Peter, let's just jump into the regional performance. Let's start out in the US, looking at the month-to-date figures of the S&P 500. It's more or less flat with 0.4 plus, at least when we looked at the numbers yesterday. What's your take on the S&P 500?
Yeah, exactly. We did the script yesterday, so and we had a rather significant move actually in the U.S. equity market despite of the hot inflation report. But we'll get back to that. So if you take the S&P 500, including the close from yesterday, the month-to-date performance is 1.6%, and that's okay. But you have markets that are moving much more. I mean, you have the European equity market up 3.5%. You have the Hang Seng up 3.5%, so that's the Hong Kong market. And then you have Nikkei, which is the worst performing market, up only at 0.2%. So, but staying with the U.S. equity market, and I'll come back to why I was a little bit surprised what happened yesterday, but I wrote recently a note to our clients where I sort of talked about this rubber band approach to the market, and the rubber band meaning that it has been really been stretched a lot because of valuations, and there's always a limit to how much you can stretch your valuations because they have to be followed up by performance. So right now there are huge expectations being built into the S&P 500, and it is one of the most expensive markets in the entire world. And I don't feel very comfortable about what's happening in the U.S. I think there is an increasing degree of speculative fever. And one of the interesting things that are happening in the U.S. market as well is that a lot of the technology companies, you're beginning to see an increase in insider selling both across Amazon, see it in NVIDIA. In particular, that's been one of the cases in the recent days. I really feel that we potentially are getting closer to some turning point in how good this U.S. equity market can be.
And you mentioned also the performance of the other indices. Just if we just brief over them generally, what's your general takeaway? Is there any surprises when we look at Europe as a high performer and also China and then the Nikkei in Japan performing a bit less well, but still in plus?
Yeah, so the brief comments are as follows. Europe, I think, is a little bit surprised because the economy, while stabilizing, is not really jumping back to red hot levels. So I think the equity market performance we see in Europe is quite interesting. Having said that, it's one of those markets regions in the world with the most attractive valuations. So there could be some yield chasing there, potential early signs of rotation into Europe because of that. There's also a more defensive characteristics in the European market. So if you believe that there could be a negative surprise, then that could probably make the case why we have seen what we have seen. The Hang Seng or the Hong Kong equity market is definitely tied to a lot of the initiatives that the Chinese government is doing to try to revive growth. And there are some signs that things are improving. There are also still signs that a lot of structural issues are still in place in China. I don't think we are out of the woods, but we have moved to some pretty significant levels in the Hang Seng. I think we've got back to some of the levels we had early on in the first couple of trading days of the year. And then Nikkei, which has been one of the best performing equity markets over the past year, has really reversed in the past week. And a lot of it has to do with this pivot from the Bank of Japan to sort of talk about that they very soon could move on the policy rate, take it out of negative territory and into plus. And that's just, you know, is strengthening the Japanese yen. There's definitely a sense that the Bank of Japan is uneasy about a dollar yen of around 150. There are some potential long-term dynamics which could be bad for inflation from a continuous weakening of the currency. So I think this is one of the bigger themes that you and I are going to talk much more about, because it's pretty significant if the Bank of Japan moves and we see a significant strengthening of the yen, and it will have a huge impact on Japanese equities.
So just to summarize, you can see that the US and Japan have some significant risk. I guess that China is still also at risk, whereas Europe, well, we have some macro figures that is still in question, but generally looks okay. Is that the right way to conclude the regions?
I think so.
All right, then let's move into something else, because one of the things that's been the main focus of equity markets, I guess, for the last at least few years, has been tech stocks, and especially US tech stocks. We have the Magnificent Seven, etc. And one of those is Nvidia, which has been one of those very impressive cases of just going up and up and up. But then this Friday, we had a very big negative move. What happened there, Peter?
Yeah. What happened on that
the
Friday?
The big question, big money question.
Yeah, excuse me. So we had an intraday move on Friday from the highs to the lows of 11.2%. And we're not talking about a small regional industrial company in the Midwest in the US. No, we're talking about Nvidia, the most hyped, one of the largest, most valuable companies in the entire world. $2 trillion market cap swings by more than 10% in a single trading session. I think that a lot of it has to do with there's a huge amount of retail participation in Nvidia. That in itself makes this stock much more volatile, because a lot of retail investors not necessarily looking as much at the valuations, looking a lot more at price movements, but also just buying into the story that I want to have exposure to the strongest AI company in this first investment boom that we're seeing in AI. And then, of course, also on Friday, you have a lot of options expiring on that Friday. There's a lot of derivatives trading going on in Nvidia. It's become a huge thing in the US, and that has a tendency, depending on how market makers are hedging their exposure, can also move the needle. You have all these 0-day to expiry options that can cause more amplification in the move. So and then yesterday, son, we had a big move again the other way around, right? Because, and we'll get back to that, what happened yesterday, which was a little bit of surprise. But if you take yesterday's move, it's up 7%. So within three trading days, you have had a full range of maybe 13%, and one of the days were down 11%, and another day was up 7%. To me, it comes back to my point on the speculative fever. I don't have a good feeling when I see these type of moves. I just must say, I can only encourage people that if you have a lot of gains, strong gains from US technology companies, I'm not arguing that everyone should go out and sell everything. That's not what I would do personally in my own portfolio. But taking a little bit of those gains and think about how you can get exposure to other sectors, other regions, just to be prepared for a change in the mood, because this is not normal. That's all I can say.
No, and I guess this is, I mean, it has been a pretty remarkable Cinderella story with especially the US tech stocks, that they've just defied everything on both a macro and a micro level and said that we're just going to keep going up. But this is the first sign that they are, as are with all stocks, and that's also one of your pet peeves about sort of risk-adjusted returns and diversification, etc., that as any other company, they aren't untouchable in relation to also hit a tough situation.
No, exactly. And I just saw a great analysis the other day where there was this comparison to what happened in 1999 and 2000, which was the dot-com bubble. There was actually a lot of the technology companies, a lot of them were not profitable, to be fair. But there was a cohort of those strong momentum stocks in the technology sector that actually had accelerating earnings growth. Cisco was one of them. You know, they will have a lot of earnings growth and revenue growth, and just suddenly everything comes to a halt. I'm not saying that's going to happen for AI. I think, you know, the ecosystem around technology is very different from 1999. But it's just to say that, you know, just because the share price is going up strongly and you have a positive development in the fundamentals on the revenue and earnings, that's not necessarily a sign that everything is just rosy 3 years out. And the demand has been increasing so much for NVIDIA that you have to wonder, can it continue or will they hit a stumbling block? And then we're coming back to what I just said about, you know, insiders are beginning to sell out in NVIDIA shares. And it's something we're going to write about because not that that is necessarily the strongest signals in the world and it works every time. But on the other hand, it is pretty significant when you see insiders selling and buying. It is one of those things that you should pay attention to.
And I guess at the very least, that can signal like when insiders realize that we shouldn't speculate on why they are selling. But at least one of the points could be that this profit taking, if you've had like a very very good time in an equity, it's time to just take some of it off and rebalance your portfolio so you actually aren't leveraged too much to one product or one stock, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. So, but we will be writing about it, and I think next time we are on the podcast together, Son, I think we should dive a little bit more into this topic because you're right, there are genuine causes for why you would do insider selling as a senior management person, but there are also some things you can infer from looking at selling patterns relative to the past. But we'll get into those details at a later point.
Yes, definitely. I have noted that is one of the things we will be discussing at a later stage. One of the things we will be discussing in this period, in this podcast episode, is the CPI that came out yesterday, because another big topic apart from US stocks has been interest rates and when or whether the Federal Reserve is gonna cut. And one of the things that they are looking at is, of course, inflation. And I know it wasn't their favorite target that came out yesterday, the CPI, but it still came out strong. So I assume that it hasn't really played into the hand of interest rate cuts so far.
No, I mean, it's what can we say? I mean, it's if you look at the inflation report, just taking it from a high level perspective, we had a core that came in at 3.8 year-over-year. And a headline that came in at 3.2%. Both those figures were 0.1 percentage point above the consensus. So we got a little bit hotter inflation report than what the market or economists had expected. I think the real kicker, for me at least, was that the super core, which is a measure where you strip out housing cost and energy, so you're really focusing on some of the more sticky parts, those that are less volatile, that super core measure was actually ticking higher in that February report. If you look at one of the other measures that I really like a lot is the U.S. services sector, excluding energy. So here you still have rent cost in it. That's almost 60% of the inflation basket in the U.S. And we have to be clear, just stated up front here, that the inflation basket, the traditional one, the CPI, is a little bit different in its index weight composition than what is called the PCE, which is the Personal Consumption Expenditures Index, which is the one the Fed is using, just so we have that cleared. But over time, they sort of show the same trends, but there can be variations in smaller time periods. If you look at this core services inflation, then and you take the average of the past 6 months on month figures, then you can take that and you can annualize that. And that gives you a pretty updated idea of where is the inflation rate right now on an annualized basis. And if you take that, it's at 5.8%. That's a 1 percentage point increase over the past 6-7 months. So you've actually seen an acceleration in the underlying core services inflation. And this inflation measure is very much linked to wage dynamics. Wages in the US are up sort of around 5%. Mm. So I think that this, I mean, I think this was really an inflation report that gives a lot of credit and ammunition for the Fed to be in this wait and see mode. There is not a huge need right now, as long as the economy is holding up as it is right now. There's no need to really just start the rate cut cycle. We had a 10 We had a 10-year yield in the U.S. on government bonds moving 6 basis points higher. Not a big move, but there was the bond market's response to that hotter inflation report, you know, again, pushing out the interest rate cut cycle there a little bit, also on the long end of the yield curve. And despite of that, you have the U.S. equity market rallying to new all-time highs, moving up more than 1%. And that's why, as we talked about earlier in the podcast, it makes me a little bit nervous of what is going on in the equity market.
Yeah, because that's kind of that's kind of the contrary point to what we discussed about Nvidia for maybe one of the first time showing that they aren't invincible. Here the U.S. equity market basically defies financial logic that when you have high inflation figures, that will at least mean that interest rates will stay at a level or maybe even go higher. That's not where we are right now. Which in theory should be bad for companies and therefore also for the stock market. So it is a little bit weird that we see such an increase in equity markets on the basis of this one, right?
Yeah, and just final color on this before we move on to the last topic. So if you look at the SOFA contracts are basically a futures market that prices the overnight financing rate, which gets very close to the Fed policy rate. So it's a way to measure how the market is pricing what the Fed will do. And if you look at this futures contract for December this year, you can see that right now, as of yesterday, it ended at 4.47. So that's 86 basis points below the current effective policy rate. So that's closer to 3 cuts than 4 cuts. So the market, and just a couple of days ago, we were at closer to 4 cuts. So this inflation report basically removed or annihilated an entire interest rate cut. So we have now gone from 4 to 3. And when we were in the early parts of the year, we were talking about 7. So, and if you just compare it to the last time we had an inflation report, that December SOFA contract has increased by 40 basis points. So just between 2 inflation reports, we've taken out almost 2 rate cuts. So the only way you can justify the equities are moving higher is that if the equity market says, okay, this inflation rate also means that the economy is not cooling down, slipping into recession. There is nominal growth rate, and you know that goes into cash flows, etc. So that's the offsetting factor. I find the market reaction yesterday a little bit weird, to be honest.
Yeah, and on the back of that, we also have this U.S. election lingering in November that will probably to some extent have an effect on the Fed's rate cut. So it's going to be super interesting to see over the next, I guess, 3 or 4 months, how everything turns out, because that'll hopefully give us some of that direction that we have been asking for throughout 2024. But let's move on to the final point, which is a company that isn't part of the Magnificent Seven, but is still one of the, I guess I don't know if you can call it a vintage IT company from the US, but I feel like we've been talking earnings for a long time here during this earnings season, and we are really in the final stretch, but that doesn't mean that this is any less significant, because Oracle came out with their earnings, I think it was Monday, and that was actually kind of an interesting earnings. I know that was at least your take, Peter. Could you just tell us why and what happened?
Yeah, so a little bit of background for those listeners that don't know what Oracle is. Oracle is one of the old technology companies from back in the old days when you had, we still have relational databases, but Oracle was big in that. They were a software company selling a lot of database software. They had a business model that was on-premise. That means that you sell a lot of software up front, and then you have a services contract, or if customers want something extra, they pay extra on top of what they had in the initial purchase. Oracle was not favored by the market for many years because it was seen as this old company that had difficulties shifting their business model away from on-premise to a SaaS model that lives in the cloud, where you stretch basically your cash flow over a longer time period. But the predictability and the recurring revenue makes the company much more attractive, much, much easier to model. And that was sort of the narrative for a long time. But then since this AI came along, and I just will admit it was not on my radar, but apparently Oracle is really making some positive results now. So if you just look at since late 2022, the company stock was trading at $60. It closed at 127 yesterday. So that's more than a doubling and a little bit more than a year. And the big kicker was because the result itself was not impressive. I mean, it was in line with the estimates, but hidden in the details was this what is called remaining performance obligation. That's an item that sits on the balance sheet, and you can infer orders basically into Oracle from that number. And it came out at $80 billion versus 59 expected. And that was due to some pretty sizable orders in their cloud business. So Oracle also raised their target for capital expenditures for the quarter. So they're really catching some tailwind here. And I think it's a big surprise. And now we have Oracle at an all-time high. Some of our listeners might be wondering, okay, so is this, has the train already left the station? And this is where it gets really interesting, because if you look at the valuation and compare it to a lot of the other AI-related stocks, I mean, if you look at the free cash flow and you sort of calculate the free cash flow yield, it is around 3%. And there are a lot of technology stocks related to AI that trades closer to 1% and even below 1% on free cash flow. So this is an old giant with a very solid business that is apparently catching this tailwind. So I'm not worried about the valuation. I think I would not be surprised if Oracle could continue to ride this AI momentum in the cloud business.
It is pretty crazy that we've arrived at a point in time where we can call something related to IT the old days, but yeah. That is time flies, and that is, of course, how it should be. And that's also the case in this podcast episode, Peter. I think we're going to leave it here, and just want to say thank you so much for coming and making us all a little bit smarter, as always. And then I just want to say, on behalf of Peter, the Saxo Market Call podcast, everybody here at Saxo, my name is Søren Otto. Thank you so much for listening. We will be back anytime soon, and until then, happy trading.